Hey guys, Harrison Wanamaker Mechanic once again with a brand new podcast for you. Welcome back to episode 12 of Motorsport 101, the podcast where we feature pretty much everything in motorsport, kind of, sort of. It's going to get busier in the next couple of weeks, I promise. But apologies for not having a show on last week. Unfortunately, we all got a little bit wrapped up. Ryan King right now is currently somewhere celebrating Kevin Magnussen's return to Formula 1. So he's not with us on this show. It's a weird thing. We've had 10 straight shows with him on it, and now he's missed the last two. It's weird how these things turn out. But we've got a couple of nice stand-ins. First up, due to popular demand, and I've completely ignored his two-show suspension, the Kraken is back.
Hey, what's up?
Dino Vandenbroek is back with us for another show and making his Motorsport 101 debut. This has been long requested. Not had a chance to get around to it yet, but he came through at the 11th hour. Well, welcome, former YouTuber, Downforce Radio host, and general man of the hour, Scott Woodwiss.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you may know him as Rapid Scorpion on Twitter. He's an old friend of mine from our Around the Corner days. If anyone knows me from YouTube, you've probably seen him on Series 2. He's the all-time wins leader, after all, and he doesn't half remind me of that every time he's on.
No, I'll take some credit away for that. I think I'm matched with somebody. Somebody's matched the match with me, I think, haven't I?
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure. How many of you won? Is it four?
I'm pretty sure someone else has won four, so I don't want to take all the credit.
Tom Stanley may have had four, but I'm not sure on that one. I've got to check that one over, because we only did five episodes of the last series. Not as many as I would have liked, but people have been asking me, yes, series three will be a thing in a couple of weeks' time, I promise. But if you haven't heard him already, check him out on Downforce Radio. He does stuff, basically. He ends up being on Pitboard. He does the Racing Game podcast every now and again as well. He still owes me an appearance on that show, by the way.
I'll get you on next month. That's fine. No. Honestly, you can hold me to that next month.
Hey, I will beat you with a stick till the end of time if this one doesn't happen. You know that, Scott?
Don't I know it?
We're going to be talking over a whole heap of basically Formula 1 related stuff for the next probably hour and a quarter or so, more than likely. It's a loaded show because there's a lot of interesting bits of news that have come out even in the last 6 to 8 hours that are kind of worth talking about. So, yeah, basically, I'll give you a bit of a basic rundown of the whole show for you. We've got the big news, obviously, that came through breaking news this morning, that Fernando Alonso will be missing the Australian Grand Prix for McLaren Honda. And Kevin Magnussen is back temporarily to fill the void. Essentially, the concussion that Alonso suffered in testing last week has come back to bite McLaren in the bumhole, so to speak. But we'll be talking about that, whether, you know, Magnussen coming in to replace him for a round. Is there a conspiracy? Et cetera, in big capital letters. Probably not, but whatever. We're talking about Carmen Jordá, Lotus's new development driver, and the big problems that come along with that, and why I'm not very happy with that at all. But we'll be talking about that. The problem, I think, with women trying to get into F1, I think, is worth discussing. And Susie Wolf getting more practice time as well, because who doesn't love Susie Wolf? Again, Ryan King's probably listening to this right now, crying, because that's his favourite as well. we'll talk a little bit about Mercedes testing and why their numbers are so ridiculous and just how much are they going to destroy the field by. We'll be talking about the helmet design ban, which came through last week. Bernie paying the smaller teams in advance for the 2015 season. And catering being auctioned off, and the ongoing story of Manor's return. So, all that, and probably some in-house jokes from Kraken on this week's episode of Motorsport.
You just have so little faith in me. You just know it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's inevitable. Like, we know how you operate around here, Gino.
If he has little faith in you, how much faith do you think he has in me?
we do.
It's in the negatives.
As you can see, we're off to a very optimistic start. But let's get straight into it and let's cover the big headlining story of the day, and that just came through literally this morning, about 12 hours ago from the time we're taping this show. Fernando Alonso will be missing the Australian Grand Prix due to ongoing symptoms of his concussion, even though he's completely fine, according to Fernando Alonso's own doctors. Essentially, McLaren came out of a statement this morning saying that in terms of precautionary measures, Alonso will be missing the Australian Grand Prix, I think mostly down to the risks, or the advanced risk of a second impact syndrome, which is a side effect of having a concussion, the possibility of a second big impact doing even more severe damage, essentially. And as a result, Kevin Magnussen, the McLaren test and development driver, will be coming in. He'll be coming back in for probably just the one round in Australia. to fill in for the time being. I just find it hilarious that after all the talk about who's driving for McLaren next year, the talk of Stoffel, the talk of Kevin, the talk of Alonso on the way in, we've come right back to where we started again, which I just find hilarious more than anything else. But Scott, what are you making the news this morning?
Well, obviously it's a shame he's not going to be in Australia, but I think the fact that there's all these conspiracies about he's doing it on purpose, I mean, if I'm honest, I'm rubbishing it, and not because I'm an Alonso fanboy or anything. Like I said, I respect Alonso as a driver, I think he's a fantastic talent, I think he's also a pretty nice guy as well, but I don't see the reason why people would say, oh, he's doing this as a scapegoat to try and get out of McLaren because the car's not that good. What, already? I mean, if that was the case, then don't you think effectively if he was doing that just to get out of McLaren right now to try and get him to pay him off to try and get out to force McLaren to pay money and probably take more money out than they don't probably have because they spent it all on, you know, all the money they're going to try and get to develop Honda. Don't you think that's not only going to wreck McLaren but also wreck Alonso's reputation as well? Because think about it, why would you want to sign a driver who does that to kind of, as soon as the car, he gets one side of the car not being good enough, he finds any kind of way to try and get out and cost the team a lot of money trying to buy him out of the contract. He's just signed himself up to, I think, I'm not sure, is it a 2 or 3 year contract he signed himself up to or something?
2 years, I believe it was.
Yeah, 2 years. Why would you then, right at the start of the season, even though the car is, yes, having teething troubles, there's a new engine, you're going to have that, why would you then suddenly try to get yourself out of that when you just start committing to yourself for 2 years? It's like, and that's going to cost the team a ton of money. And also, it's going to mean, like I said, his reputation is going to dip because he'll be seeing somebody that he's like a person who just wants to be in a good car. If it's anything less than that, he's going to go out. I mean, I don't think he's like that type. I mean, look at how much I don't want to say suffered. He didn't suffer at Ferrari, but he kind of, how much he toiled at Ferrari for 5 years to try and give them a good car in the championship. But Ryan, I think it was 50-50 on that side. Alonso did the best he could, but obviously, if you've got a car that's less than up to scratch, then, you know, obviously, there's only so much you can do with it. But he did do stuff with that car that probably, but he put it up into positions that it probably shouldn't have been. But I think on the whole, it's right for the doctors to be safe rather than sorry. And I can totally see why they've done that. In fact, even Alonso's put it on Twitter. He said, in his words on the Twitter, he put, "It will be tough not to be in Australia, but I understand the recommendations. A second impact in less than 21 days, then inverted commas, in capital letters, no. And then hashtag countdown Malaysia." He knows what the danger is, as do the doctors. He knows he's fine, but he doesn't want to risk himself getting any of the damage. So I think it's a good call. And all I say is, bring on Malaysia and we'll welcome him back.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I don't think Alonso's Montoya. I don't think he's going to quit like mid-season or what was started. And I think the main issue of the conspiracies is because of the contradictory remarks by Ron Dennis when he said, "Oh, he's going to be fine. Oh, he's going to make Australia," and that's when people started to raise their suspicions. Yeah. I'm going to admit, I did as well. I was skeptical. I thought, "Well, is there something else going on?" And I was referring to, was he injured more? Was there something wrong with the car? But it just does look like now it wasn't just a concussion, and but this action is just to be safe. I mean, you don't want to injure Alonso more because what second impact syndromes? I'm guessing is pretty worse.
Very
if
severe.
It occurs. Yeah.
A lot of the time it can be fatal, and you know, it's a thing in sport in general where I'm glad more sports are starting to take notice of things like concussions, because it's something that has come up a lot in American football in the last couple of years, something that's come up in boxing, something that's come up more in football. I remember the Fugo Lloris incident from last year where he clearly played on while concussed. I think Mascherano took a big one during the World Cup, and he was allowed to keep playing even though he clearly looked out of it when he was playing. Christoph Kramer in the World Cup final as well for Germany. It happens all the time, and I'm glad that it's starting to take better notice of more than anything else. But I'm not buying a conspiracy at all, mainly because the media was trying to take Ron Dennis' words seriously, you know, that known medical expert Ron Dennis when it comes to what a concussion is and what a concussion isn't. And you know,
I think people are just
Alonso's doctors themselves said he was always fine. This is more of a precaution, and you know, that's just, I think we should just take that for what it is, more than just saying, "Oh well, it's a conspiracy, he's trying to get out of the team," even though like he's got 29 million reasons not to leave that team at the moment given the size of the contract he signed. So
I think people are just like a bit weirded out of the concept of concussion in F1. It's like they've not seen that before because it's never really been tackled.
Twice in the last 5 years. Like Felipe Massa had one in 2013 at Monaco, and I think Sergio Perez had one at Monaco 2011 as well. And I think they only missed a round. I don't think Massa missed any time at all, actually. I think Massa was okay, and I think Perez only missed the one round anyway. So you know.
I think it's been blown out of proportion also because Alonso is the famous driver, you could say. He's one of the top drivers. Yeah. And, of course, McLaren's issue with Honda at the minute, you know, with the car being so unreliable, people would say, oh, was there something more to it? You know, that kind of stuff.
It's like putting two and two together and coming up with 22. It's just, you can see why they've done it. It's just there's not much logic to actually put in it. I mean, if we were talking about bad cars in testing, if that was a thing last year, Sebastian Vettel was straight up retired.
And also as well, it's a case of, you know, with this kind of thing happening, I was trying to think now what's going to go now. It's typically me. I was going to think of something, but that's it. With Ron Dennis, there's a well-known term with Ron called Ron Speak, where effectively it's a case of he finds his own unique way of describing something that technically you could say in a few simple words, but he strings it out into several others. Effectively, he may have just done that. Effectively, I remember there was one time back 2005, he just tried to describe a problem with I think with Raikkonen's engine or something had a problem, and it's a simple thing of trouble. It's a complication from the management part of the internal system of the engine. You could just say it was an engine failure, and that would have been a simple thing to say. It's like, so I think it might have been a case of, you know, Ron, against probably someone's just taken it literally, as Cracker said, he's probably literally taken what Ron said literally and said, oh, he's going to be in Australia, but why is he not going to be there? He might not want to go back on the team. Right, 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 right. It's like, well, hold on a minute. We know obviously how kind of presumptuous the media can be. Obviously, I know us being media types of sort, obviously on the podcast, I know, but it's a case of, you know, absolutely. But, you know, it's a case we sit back and think, well, hold on a second here, isn't it better to be safe rather than sorry sometimes? I mean, yes, it's not going to be too much of a loss to McLaren because, like I said, they've got Kevin Magnussen. You know, he proved himself in the first couple of rounds last year. All right, maybe what he did last year maybe wasn't too enough to do that, and getting back into the car will help him prove himself again in 2015 with this new car, especially with the McLaren Honda. And therefore, it should only vindicate the fact that McLaren were right to at least keep him on in some roles as a reserve, as a third driver. Because I think, to be fair, as an option, obviously, that he's the best option they had, of course. Stoffel Vandoorne's good as well. He's their second option for a reserve driver, which is brilliant. He's come up through the ranks of GP2. But I think that this has all been blown way out of proportions, as it so often is in the media, and especially in Formula 1. It happens too often. But I think it's a good move from them. It's a good move all round because, like I said, we get to see a fit of 100%, you know, fighting fit Alonso from Malaysia. So it'd be good to watch him back in the car when hopefully McLaren and Honda sorted out their teething troubles. Probably wouldn't have done, but they'll be on the right direction to get it all sorted.
Yeah, pretty much. I can't argue with any of that. Obviously, wishing Alonso the best. I'm sure he's fine more than anything else. I mean, the thumbs up in the picture said it all, really, even though you looked pretty drugged up, to be honest. But you know, some of those things. But again, concussions are much more serious than people, I think a lot of people understand, and I'm glad that the doctors are being precautious more than anything else. And it's only the one round. Mercedes already own our souls. I don't think we're missing too much if Alonso misses just the one round. So I'm not too bothered by that. And you know, hey, what an opportunity for Kevin Magnussen as well, who, you know, obviously, I think he had a very good rookie season. You know, it wasn't amazing by any stretch. He kind of limited because, hell, your teammate's Jenson Button, who is one of the better drivers of the field, and, you know, obviously former world champion, still doing an excellent job at his age. But essentially, you know, Kevin coming back is a great opportunity for him to keep us off in the shop window. You know, there is a second man a seat available, I'm just saying. I don't think he's going to end up in it. I think he's too good for that kind of seat. But essentially, you know, keep yourself out there. You know, we all know how well he did at this very Grand Prix last year, finishing in second and holding off the arguable driver of the year in Daniel Ricciardo in the process. Pretty much for the entire Grand Prix. So, yeah, cracking. A great opportunity for Kevin Magnussen as well, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you said it before we started. It's so funny, but there's such a massive argument and feud over the interwebs, right? Like, oh, should Kevin get a seat? Oh, should Jensen get a seat? And the overwhelming demand was for Jensen to get the seat, and of course you have the Danish and certain people like Ryan and Fizzy Fan crying their eyes out. And for it to go full circle and for Kevin Magnussen to get a drive in Melbourne is kind of funny. And I've seen some of those you know, tweets saying, wouldn't it be amazing if Kevin Magnussen won? Like, would McLaren would have to keep him on, surely? But I doubt anything big will happen. I mean, Kevin Magnussen said himself that he's had very little time with the car, and this is you know, the proper definition of a fill-in. I mean, he's just there to get points if possible.
Yeah, and if anything else, McLaren's already said they're not expecting to be competitive until May, so that's more like Bahrain, China kind of time. So I wouldn't hold out too much hope on there. It's just I think people are speaking more out of hope than expectation. The thing I find funny about it is that the people that are now hoping Magnussen gets on the podium again were the same people that were trashing McLaren during testing, which kind of just amuses me in the sense of how fickle we F1 fans can be sometimes.
I guarantee that some of the people who wanted Button over Magnussen are now cheering for Magnussen.
Well, Ryan King was cheering for Magnussen anyway, so like him getting his seat, losing it, and bringing it back didn't really bother him one bit. He's unswayed in his love affair with Kevin Magnussen. Like, that is not going to be a problem at all, more than anything else. But obviously, just before we move on from that segment, obviously best wishes to Fernando. I'm sure he'll be fine. Hopefully to see him back in Malaysia, the race he won just 2 years ago, after all. Yeah. Back when F1 wasn't quite so broken.
I hope you enjoy the podcast, Fernando.
Fernando, if you're listening, man, if you're listening, you know, you never know, right? There's always something.
Oh, no, sorry, Drake.
We love you, man. Love your work. But yeah, that's going to be a thing. So yeah, you know, obviously wishing Fernando the best. I'm sure we'll see him in Malaysia. Right, moving on. And this is going to get some heated opinions going, I'm sure. Lotus have got a new driver. Lotus have got a new development driver, and it's Carmen Jordan. And
best choice ever.
Best choice ever if you're a 14-year-old boy who hasn't gotten some lately. He's like, ooh, like, who is this nice woman in a Lotus uniform? But yeah, like, yeah, she got signed as a new development driver in the last week, and the reaction was explosive, to say the least. I'm not quite sure where to start with this one, really, because there's a lot of different angles to approach this one from.
Well, let's go with the angle of people who are not into F1 and who probably don't really know. I mean, if you're a person who doesn't know anything about F1, but you know that it's mostly male-dominated, well, completely male-dominated, to be honest, you're going to have people thinking, oh, good on her, I hope she does well. I mean, I've seen, like, the odd tweet saying, I hope she gets the podium. Like, oh, you don't know anything. But, It is a complicated situation.
This is the idiot's guide to what this hire is all about. She's a development driver. I reckon I've heard fifth in Lotus's pecking order in terms of drivers. She's not going to be racing anytime soon, okay? She's not even going to be doing test sessions in practice, because right now it's Romain Grosjean, Pascal Maldonado, Joelen Palmer, Esteban Ocon, you know, the other guy who was a rookie in Formula 3 last year, not that Dutch fella, and Carmen Jordan now, who's probably going to be doing a lot of simulator work. And there was a lot of unpopular opinions about this one. For example, Will Buxton, who has, you know, got out of his midlife crisis of being on the internet, and instead of having a Twitter page, he's now taken to Reddit, and the Formula 1 subreddit, who came out with a comment of, and I quote, "She was a corner slower than everyone else in GP3, and her best race time was 19 seconds off the pace." And he said, and I quote, "That's all I will say on the matter."
You forgot to mention what he did. You forgot to mention that was at Spa.
Yeah. 1 second per corner, and she was lifting through Eau Rouge. This isn't GP2, the main feeder series for Formula 1, or as I like to call it, where pay drivers go to hell. This is GP3, yeah. And she was 29th in this year's GP3 championship. In case you haven't worked out, that's stone dead last.
Yeah. For her to be so slow on Spa, I mean, Spa's a relatively easy track to drive,
it's
to
a
be
very
honest.
Easy track.
So, for the fact that she is a second a corner slower and overall 19 seconds slower, it's
embarrassing.
You struggle for words, because it's just like, what the hell? I mean, the Lotus. Lost hope in him.
the best finish Carmen Jordan has ever had in a GP3 race was 13th.
I felt sorry for Lotus. They've become a joke team recently. They have the two crashers. They had a terrible season last year. And, now we've hired probably the worst driver you could possibly hire. I mean, male or female, it doesn't matter. If your driver is that crap.
The running joke of Lotus, besides their badly run Twitter page, is essentially 2012, Grosjean was terrible. 2013, have a really good season, but Kimi ends up leaving. For 2014, car is terrible, has double penetration front wing. Becomes laughing joke of F1 field because of the only team that has the tusks. Insert front nose joke here. And now 2015, hiring Carmen Jordan to be a developmental driver. It just gets worse for Lotus, doesn't it, really?
I mean, on my standings, I mean, she only really fulfills about, what, a third of my quota. She's a girl, but I doubt she's gay, and she's definitely not an anime, so...
She's not anime, not sure if she's lesbian or not, though.
That's all you're getting, my fans, that's all you're getting.
Liar. Right, but essentially, all joking aside, you know, even if this was a marketing hire, in terms of, you know, if Lotus really went into a boardroom meeting and said, okay, we want a woman to be a part of our team, we want a female driver, why go for her when there are better women out there still?
Exactly.
Because you've got, for example, Smirdi Silvestro, who... It broke my heart, because the day this news broke out was the same day that Formula E put a YouTube video of Di Silvestro doing a Formula E tech demo in Geneva, Switzerland. Well, basically, where Switzerland hate the car.
Yeah. Where the car goes to die, basically.
Where the car goes to die, Switzerland. And they got a Swiss woman, Smirnoff Silvestro, who is a podium runner in IndyCar, who was on the podium last year and is a decent mid-level runner in IndyCar, which is the nearest thing we've got to Formula 1 at the moment. Completely glossed over, and I thought she'd be a great fit for that series as well, funnily enough. But, yeah. It's
purely a stunt. I cannot see them thinking logically, like, oh, this... she's a good driver. It is clearly a stunt. They were clearly desperate to have a vagina in the team, basically. Yeah,
are you on this one, Scott? Do you think it's purely marketing on this one?
The thing is, I said this on another podcast last week, is that I don't think it called me crazy, and it's not for the reasons that you think. But listen, hear me out. Call me crazy, but I don't see anything wrong with this appointment because
no, you're crazy, mate. Leave the podcast. Just go.
I'm not leaving until I had my say. The thing is, though, is that the whole point of a development driver is just that. Switch the two words around. Driver development. Now, granted. I agree with the fact that she's not going to be anywhere near an F1 car anytime soon. I agree with that, because obviously our previous results, obviously, you know, she needs, and I believe it, I know this will sound like an understatement, but she needs a lot of work before she gets to that level. Believe me, I know that, and I understand that, okay, yep. Believe me.
Yep.
But I don't think this is something just because, for one, she's a female, because, you know, for one, I don't think Lotus would be that kind of narrow-minded, and therefore, I'm not saying they are one, that sexist to kind of say, oh, we just need an attractive female who happens to be a racing driver just to get us in our team, just to get us a bit more publicity. I don't know if it's money-motivated. I know Lotus haven't exactly had the most amount of funds recently again. The thing is that we don't know the official line from Lotus as to why they brought her on board. We don't know that yet.
Right.
And until we know that, all we can do is speculate, which we like to do in the media, as we were saying with the Alonso story. Now, it's a case of, you know, and the thing is, though, is that obviously she's had all this hate and all this criticism, but it's like I said in the other podcast, there's one person out of all this who does not give a damn what anyone thinks about what the situation, and that person's Carmen Jordan herself, because let's face it. If you were in Carmen Jordan's situation, and if you were given a Lotus development drive, regardless of how you perform in GP3, would you turn it down?
Oh, of course not. Like, I mean... like,
there you go.
Anyone would take that opportunity with, like, both hands and a foot and their teeth. It's you're gonna take it. I just think the main issue is if Carmen Jordan was a man, she would not have that drive. I highly doubt it.
Like, seriously, on credentials alone, male or female, there'd be 200 better qualified drivers ready for that seat right now.
Unless you own a gold mine, you're not getting in that seat if you have results that bad.
Obviously, to a degree, we are speculating on this, and, you know, I don't want to completely throw Lotus under the bus here, but, you can't deny it doesn't look good, you know what I mean? Because people are going to draw that same conclusion that we did earlier.
And it does more harm than good, because, of course, it's like, again, we don't know the circumstances, but if we're looking at the view that she's getting in just because she's a woman, that does more harm than good to the whole cause, because
what
it's not...
What does Venom and Driver actually do? They're meant to be running the simulator, trying to maximise the most out of the car and using data. If she's sat in the corner slower than most other people, what good is that going to do? It doesn't even fit the job criteria, really.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it looks like just a ploy to get a woman in, simply because she's a woman, not because she has any talent, or, you know, enough talent to...
I'm not saying that's the official reason, but it's very hard not to draw that conclusion from this, because it is devoid of any other kind of logic.
I can see where you're coming from on that one, and I agree. Obviously, I think in some ways, not as you said, that was maybe probably a factor. I think probably in terms of bringing it for marketing purposes, again, it's probably not, as you said, not the defining factor. I think it's probably maybe a factor, I suppose, in that case. It's the same situation you have with people like Simone de Silvestro, with people like Danica Patrick, with people like Susie Wolf. You know, if there's an attractive enough female who is a good racing driver, that is going to be marketable, that was going to go forwards. At the same time, there are drivers out there like who I know who are fantastic drivers who are females who deserve the attention as well. People like, you know, Alice Powell, Betska Vissa, Abby Eaton at club level, also Rebecca Jackson, a few other drivers, also, and riders as well, because remember, there is a female rider who's running in the Works Honda team in the British Superbike Championship, remember?
And we've got two in Moto3 this year as well.
Yeah, I was about to mention.
Yeah. Herrera as well, so yeah, there's two in Moto3 this year as well.
Yeah, and I completely get, and I understand that effectively it's maybe widely acknowledged in some contexts. Now, I'm not saying this is my personal opinion at all. I'm just disclaiming myself here. I know it's probably sometimes maybe it's the wider perception of maybe people in general, I think, if I'm generalising here, that more attractive people tend to progress better because their looks is a factor in their possibility. That's not me being derogatory to anyone who is considered unattractive in anyone. That's just human nature. It's a case of,
I agree. I completely agree with that.
You know, obviously, but that's not saying that anyone who is not as physically attractive as somebody else deserves that everyone who lesser. Basically, what I'm saying is that in no way is someone like Alice Powell unattractive at all. And her driving is stellar enough to earn her a drive. But unfortunately, we do live in a situation where if you put up on a choice between Alice Powell and Carmen Jordá, and it was in terms of who's the more marketable prospect, even though in terms of skill Alice Powell is better, unfortunately, and again, this is not my personal view on it, even though, yes, I'll fully admit Carmen Jordá is attractive, and I think we can't deny that.
No one's denying that.
Well, being perfectly honest, yes, Carmen Jordá is attractive, but, you know, in terms of marketability, unfortunately, as the way the world works, people will go towards Carmen Jordá because she's a racing driver and she's considered in the wider range more physically attractive than Alice Powell. If I was picking, I'd pick Alice Powell because of driver talent, she deserves the ability.
Common sense, Woodwiss, you know that.
and that's how everyone needs to look at this. It's a case of, you know, and the thing is, who's to say that, like I said, you know, Susie Wolf, and also one thing to consider, Susie Wolf has been part of the Williams team, but in the last couple of years, she's been Williams development driver. Just I'm going to reel off to you the list of everything that she's raced since then. Now, that's not slighting her at all, but although she has kind of raced the single seats before, and she has scored podiums, and she has, the last thing she raced, I believe, was DTM. Apart from that, she's been out of the spotlight and slowly worked her way into like a Williams development driver role. And to be fair, she's proved herself in the Barcelona test, and she did a good well, racked up a few good few laps, she's going to get more opportunities. I think it's going to be at Barcelona and also at Silverstone and also in the test after the Austrian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fair enough. Now, I'm not saying Carmen Jordá will work their way, but I'm not saying that her having her as a development driver is going to be a negative thing in terms of her abilities, because there's a lot that she can learn from Lotus, even just being a development driver. You know, I mean, any young driver that steps into a development driver role is not perfect. Yes, they're going to have an ounce of talent in them.
Young, Scott. She's 26.
No, granted, but at the same time, you have to think, again, obviously, you know, rest in peace, of course, Marie de Velotta, of course. She was brought on as a Marussia test driver. Now, in terms of results for her, and obviously her results were slightly better than Carmen Jordá's, but in the same sense, effectively, she was there, so effectively, and she wasn't exactly the youngest person to bring on either. Let's be fair on that one.
Yeah.
In fact, I think she's maybe a little bit older than Carmen Jordan was. So,
it's
again...
For me, right, and this is how I look at it, like, what's the end game here of having her on the roster? I said the same thing when Susie Wolf got employed, and that was, like, back in 2012, where this was a thing. When she got hired at Williams as a 29-year-old. She's now 32, and she's a development driver and testing for them? Like, what's the end game here? Like, I don't understand what the long-term plan is for something like that. Like,
I don't think there is any end game. It's literally just there as a publicity stunt, banned because Toto Wolff had some power in the team, and, you know...
Yeah,
he owned
a lot more shares in Williams back then, to be fair.
To be honest...
Conflict of interest.
To be honest, as has been said, I mean, she kind of has proven herself. I mean, she's okay as a test driver. Of course, you know, she...
Well, define proving yourself.
Well, yeah, that's a very loose, that can be a very loose
term.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, it's like, well, like, what would you describe as proving yourself? Like, some decent practice pace, even though she was put in the second best car in the field last year in Germany, you know, and... You know, not basically been in the car.
At least she's
like
there.
That.
Even, you know, even though you can say, oh, she had the second best car, at least she's there. At least she's not doing those.
My bottom line point is this: if you're going to look for a female driver to get into motorsport, I'd like to see a female driver get employed on merit rather than attractiveness.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Because basically, by hiring someone like Carmen Jordan, I think you're sending out the wrong kind of message about how to get women into motorsport, because it would take one Google search to see her credentials, which are lacking immensely, and then seeing comments like Mitch Evans throwing her under the bus on Twitter, and Connor Daly saying racing is broken, and these are very, very good drivers who have not been given the opportunity yet saying this. Connor Daly should be in F1 right now, quite frankly, and he's not there. And, you know, Mitch Evans is a very good driver in his own right. When your own peers are throwing you under the bus, it's not a good look for anyone.
Of course, but I think also, and I agree with that, it's a case of there are a lot of talented drivers out there who deserve at least a development driver role. I do agree with that. The thing is that it's effectively, it's a case of, you know, this is going to be a position which I think is going to be, I think the term is defined as character building for Carl in terms of how much flack she can take from other, from both their peers and from the general public in terms of the appointment, I think. I think what we need is a definitive line from Lotus is to exactly, I'm not sure if it even exists on the website or anywhere that it's been said at all as to why she's been brought on exactly, but if not, someone needs to get on the board with Gerard Lopez or whoever it is that's kind of running the, who made the decision, and actually ask the defining question, what was the defining factor, and get a straight answer from them, you know, because, and the thing is that when it comes to it's a tricky thing, and it's something which needs to be tread lightly. The thing is, though, is that what it will, the one beneficial part of it is going to be going forward is that if and when Lotus decides to then, it's time for her to move on, the fact that she was a Lotus F1 development driver, let's be honest here, that's only going to improve her CV a bit more in terms of getting more opportunities going forward. Because if you think about it, if just looking at GP3 credentials, when you're looking at any other kind of racing, unless you have the money to back it up, which I'm pretty sure in some cases she probably does, if we're going to be presumptuous, then effectively, then in terms of going forward to anything, it'd be a bit tricky. When you've then got the CV, you can say, oh, I did GP3, etc., I've got the money here, oh, plus I was a Lotus F1 development driver, you know, that's only going to add you a bit more kind of credibility in terms of, one of Lotus F1 brought her on, that she must be at least half decent in some cases. Wait, I know where that was going.
You're crazy, man, you're crazy.
No, but like I said, anything that looks good in terms of, like, if you want to use the term, like a blue chip company or anything like that, it gives you more credibility because effectively it means, well, if a company like that is going to bring you on, then there must be something that you had in terms of, must be something in you that you were good enough to be taken on. So if it's going to be opportunities later, if there's something like, I don't know, touring car racing, or if it's GTs, or whatever it might be, or long prototypes, it's going to hold her instead a bit better, regardless of all the flack she's going to take, regardless of all the kind of criticism she's going to get from her peers and also from fans and everyone and journalists alike. So,
and if you want to be cynical, they could see more dollar signs in her as well, even so. Like, even if they're going to ignore that. Like, I'm not disputing her employability. Like, that's obviously going to go up by having that on a CV. Like,
no, of course. And I think that the important thing is going to be, is that the only thing we can do is just to sit back for the time being and just see what happens with it and see what comes of it in terms of, you know, obviously if there's then calls, if she does like, I don't know, one or two runs in the simulator and then let's say, okay, we'll pop you an F1 car for like a demo run or something. Alright, fine. If it's one of those demonstration run things, then hopefully she'll be okay with that. If it comes to like a full proper test, that's probably when things are going to start coming up that probably wouldn't even happen, because if you think about it, you need a super license to drive an F1 car. When it comes to the point, this new super license point system, I don't believe she even has any points. So therefore, effectively, she's not going to get into an F1 car anytime anyway, but at least the development, the simulator time is at least going to, in some ways, help the developer
in
some
ways. You're right. At the most, she'll get tech demos. You know, like, just hopefully it turns out better than the one that Kimi Kobayashi took at Ferrari a couple of years ago.
And let's not remind ourselves of Pastor Maldonado in Venezuela as well.
I mean, to be honest, if they did those point systems now, well, A, she'll probably get minus points if that was possible, considering how far down she has been. And B, at the moment, all these hirings are doing is just allowing people to drop more pipe bombs on the situation. And as good as that is, we don't need to hear the same old stuff. We know what needs to be done. It's just we need the teams to kind of understand that and not, make these dubious decisions.
Yeah, Freckin, the reality of the situation, though, is that half the teams literally can't afford to take that option up, unfortunately. Because trust me, if Formula One seats were taken up on pure talent alone, the grid would be very, very different right now. If we did this maybe even 5 years ago, we've seen dozens of dudes who we know are probably good enough to get into Formula One. I've either had a seat and lost it, or have basically never been given the opportunity. Look at Sam Bird, Robin Frins, Hami Agosuari, Sebastian Buemi, Anthony Davidson, the two reigning WEC world champions, may I add. You know, guys like that. We've seen it happen on countless occasions. And, you know, the fact that someone female has probably tipped people over the edge on this one, because it's one that already had a really negative reputation going in. Again, look at what Buxton was saying. He's one of the biggest spokesmen for GP2 and 3, and he destroyed her on his blog in the past, and on Reddit now we've seen as well. So overall, I can see why the reaction has been so negative. You know, you're right. Scott's right to a degree. I think we should wait and see what happens. I don't think anything will come of it, which is, I guess, probably for the best, quite frankly. But as a PR move, I think it might do Lotus a little bit of harm on this one. No, it probably won't harm the bank balance, so who cares?
I do kind of find it ironic. Her first name kind of ironic.
There's a joke in there somewhere, but we're not going to stoop to that level. There's another point I want to kind of wrap this up and end it on, is that there's actually another driver I've kind of only really noticed recently who's been taken, who actually is an attractive female racer, but at the same time has also actually had some success. And it's a driver in a little known, I think it's the which is good competing in across the pond, in the Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge, which is kind of like, best way to describe it, it's kind of like, in some ways, like if you look at like what BTCC used to be, with like the kind of it's more like a production based sort of either she's American or Canadian driver called Ashley Freiberg, 23 years old, but looking at what she's done in terms of credentials, I think she's actually won a championship as well, if I look at what that is. Bear a second, whilst my iPad loads up, I'll be able to tell you. Let's see, 2013, 2014.
We're a real planned show, by the way, folks.
Absolutely, yeah, just spot on, like, to a T, this one. But she was, in 2013, she was the first female overall North American GT3 Cup Challenge winner. And then she was, in 2014, the first female overall Continental Tire Sports Car winner, and the first female overall race winner at Daytona. So this girl can drive. She also scored some top 10 finishes in her rookie season in the Star Mazdas, a 6th place finish at Baltimore Grand Prix. So she's done quite a bit.
Star Mazda.
Absolutely, yeah. And for the one part, she also is fairly attractive as well. So not only is she marketable, she's actually got the skills to back it up. And she's going into this year, which is racing in the Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge in a BMW. So I think she's been backed by IHG Rewards, which is the same company that's backing Andy Brio and the touring cars. But they're backing her, and she's driving an M3. So credit where credit's due. Like I said, not only if given the right talent and it's nurtured properly, grass the course, I think Colin Jordan's talent needs, let's be face it, a lot of nurturing, if we're being kind, and obviously, and hopefully the development role will help in some degree with that one. You know, it's just a case of, you know, if you've got the marketability and the skill, then that's something you can go forward to, and that's hopefully something that will work. So, like I said, I wish you all the best, and hope, fingers crossed, it does work out for her. I think we just need to be a little bit less presumptuous. I know how it's all going to seem from the outset in terms of what it is in the situation, but as I said, we just need to wait and see what comes of it, and obviously then, if there's any major move which we don't disagree on, then we can start to be a bit more judgmental, I think.
Yeah. I hope all four of you understood that series and got the hold of it. check it out when you get a chance. Okay, so moving on from there real quick. We survived the Carmen Jordan testing period.
No!
Yeah, we've not been taken off the air, so hooray. Yet. I remember that in brackets. Right, so moving on real quick. Kraken found this little factoid before we just went on the air, and to put into perspective just how ridiculous Mercedes were in testing, and they were pretty ridiculous, in the sense of they set the fastest time of the test on softs compared to everybody else on super softs.
Oh, God.
Which apparently are 0.7 of a second a lap faster, supposedly. Yeah, to put into perspective, day two of the second Barcelona test happened. Nico Rosberg sets a 122.7. And after the session said it was nothing special.
No DRS, supposedly, either.
And according to Kieran Chandhok, he didn't even use his DRS, either. Yeah.
Only about just over a second off a lap record in the V10s, so, you know.
Yeah. Okay, general speaking, the cars are going to be much faster, so apparently because Pirelli have brought much better tyres this year, apparently. So, apparently cars are going to be much faster.
Wait. Pirelli? Better tyres?
Yeah, they're not going down the showbiz road anymore.
I need to comprehend that.
Hey, I don't blame Pirelli for that. I blame the FIA for trying to artificially increase entertainment more than anything else.
There's blood coming down from my nose. That's...
Yeah, I'll explain how Kraken suffers an aneurysm. Basically, yeah, we're going to have much faster cars this year than we were last year. Great, hooray! Everybody wanted faster cars anyway. But yeah, Rosberg basically set a lap that was abound. They basically set the tone that they might have 8 tenths a lap on the whole field. To which my response on Facebook was, it's time to go home. Back in
but,
season over.
But we found out something else, which is basically a championship's over kind of thing, which is that the engines that Mercedes have are so reliable, they can basically do the whole season on one engine, or at least half a season.
Yeah, they've done 6,000 kilometers, just over 6,100 kilometers of testing combined in the two cars. Now, if I said they've not changed their engine once in that time, you can work out that's about 3,000 kilometres per car. A Formula One race is about 305 kilometres. You could throw in practice and qualifying as well, obviously. Even so, even if I was being ultra conservative, that's about 7 weekends worth. That's terrifying.
It's like they only really need 3 engines. But to be fair on that report, Mercedes did need to change a few parts. So it wasn't exactly the same engine. It just had a few little,
It's time to go home. It's time to go home. Season's over.
I was trying to give hope to everyone.
Everyone's had enough now. It's time for them to go to bed.
Yeah. Time to go home. This is a 2-car championship. Don't get any ideas that anyone else is going to be competitive. And this is coming from Gino, who is a massive Williams fanboy.
Yeah, even I've given up.
I tell you what. Sorry, I was going to say, there was a story that I saw, which is actually from your favourite driver, obviously, Drace, Sebastian Vettel.
Right.
And he actually said that it's going to be a good fight behind Mercedes.
Exactly.
So, you know, if the line is, where is it? I'll try and find it on GP Update here. Where is it? I saw it. We've put it. Where did it go? What did he say on it? Again, ever organised. Let's see, where did they put it? Where's it disappeared to? I'm trying to find it now. Here we go. Yeah, Vettel expecting close fight behind Mercedes. He expects a close fight between Williams, Red Bull and Ferrari team, albeit some way behind Renault Constructors Champions Mercedes. Some way behind! Yeah, that's an understatement, isn't it? If it's 7 or 8 tenths a lap slower than the Mercedes, obviously, when you're technically on faster tyres, Yeah, I agree with Dre. You all need to go home and rethink yourselves, for goodness sake.
Yeah, when a four-time world champion basically goes out of his way to say he's not going to be competitive this year, it's time to go home.
I think we need a second place consolation prize, like the Intercontinental Belt of Formula One.
Yeah.
Like. I mean, let's face it, obviously, to put it into context, I mean, the code name for the Ferrari F1 car is the SF15T. Look at what that said. That's what everyone else is getting behind Mercedes.
The fist.
Pretty much.
The fist. Yeah.
That's exactly what Mercedes is giving everyone at the moment.
The battle for second is going to be fun. I mean, Williams have got two very solid drivers. Felipe Massa came on very strong the second half of the year. Valtteri Bottas was arguably the best of the rest and the biggest surprise of the year, coming in fourth, scoring six podiums. Only Daniel Ricciardo was more surprising, I think mostly down to the fact that Vettel had a terrible year. Well, not terrible.
And Ricciardo had a lot of luck as well.
And the car was better than we thought it was going to be, because Red Bull looked dreadful in testing. But despite that, you know, Ricciardo and Bottas were the big surprises last year. I don't think McLaren are going to be there for a little while yet. And, you know, while it's exciting to see Sebastian in red, it's going to be for third in the championship more than anything else. And let's not kid ourselves over this. It's going to be a two-horse championship, and it's going to be even more broken than anything Red Bull had in their prime.
Yeah.
So who's excited for Formula One in next weekend?
Anyone? They're just overpowered.
Mercedes OP.
I mean, the only hope is if those regulation changes come into effect in 2016 or 17, widening the cars and all that. But even then, Mercedes have such a massive advantage with their engine alone. I think they can cope with a chassis change. So it's like, what can we do?
And also as well, there's something interesting which my good friend and obviously a fellow and the guy and chap who runs Downforce, Jake Sanderson, he found something out, I think, which he revealed on the podcast last week. Is that he was talking about how he did a bit of research in terms of, you know, kind of trends in what people were saying about different racing series. And what he said was interesting was that when you look at series like World Endurance Championship and British Touring Cars and other kind of World Touring Cars and maybe World Rally Championship as well, everyone was saying, the two words that come out a lot were really excited. Obviously, get really excited at the start of the season. Do you know what the two words he found most commonly when people, when there was a new F1 story came out, people talked about F1? Do you know what the most two common words were?
Same old?
Who cares?
Ooh, that's even worse.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Because of what's happening, it's like, fortunately, Formula 1 is getting such a state where the fans are starting to get turned off and think, we don't care what's happening, you know, and they're turning to more sports like World Endurance Championship, where, you know, we're running, all right, well, it's not in its prime yet, obviously, at this point in time, it's getting there. I mean, let's face it, Toyota have been tempted back, and Toyota's one of the biggest names in WRC in its history, so if they can come back, in fact, it must be working. So, you know, it's obviously, we know how good, obviously, World Touring Cars are getting now, with the format it has, or British Touring Cars is looking epic again once more, things like IndyCar, even the Daytona 500 at NASCAR was entertaining. I mean, when you've got guys going three wide, 10 or 11 deep, back for 17 laps on end of Daytona, you know that that's a good race, because that ain't easy at all. So, you know, it really isn't. So, the fact that a lot of people are looking at F1 and thinking, don't really give a damn, to be fair, that's when you know something's wrong, because people don't care about it.
I did see a joke, just to go slightly off tangent, I did see a joke about, like, the WEC is now, like, the top series, and F1 is the feeder series to the WEC, considering how many F1 drivers are going there, or planning to go there, and how much, you could say technologically advanced and freer it is. But I can understand why people are suddenly turning off F1 a bit. I mean, I'm only really interested in Williams at the moment, and maybe some other, like, little things, like the coming regulation changes, any good news. But of course, there's a lot of bad news, which always ends up catching my attention, and I have a rant and stuff like that. But to say,
anyway.
sure. But like, for people to be completely turning off F1, I think Bernie's idea for 2014 was for the championship to be reinvigorated. Oh, new rule changes, anything can happen, and then Mercedes just kill it, and they keep killing it. If they're like beating a dead baby now,
we've replaced one dominant team for an even bigger dominant team.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, also what's quite interesting, you're talking about how you said World Endurance Championship is now a feeder series, F1's now the feeder series to it. That actually reminded me of something, is that I'm going to go on for a slightly talk about Project Cars here. bit, because in the career mode, it's quite interesting actually. If you look at the career mode, what you have is that you get all the kind of tiers, obviously like normal kind of runs up through the kind of ranks. Then you get to the point where it says, all sports cars, GT3. Then you get to the single seated career ladder. You've got Formula C, which is obviously like, you know, of things like Formula 3 or whatever it is, GP3. Yeah. Formula B, which is GP2, and the Formula A, which is F1.
And then you have the tier 1, which is LMP1.
Exactly. And there you go. So even slightly less studios consider sports cars ahead of single season Formula 1. I mean, that's... When you've got a generic racing game as big as Project Cars is, considering LMP1 prototype sports car racing bigger than effectively what is Formula 1, aka Formula A, then you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
You guys and your damn tangents.
I didn't get on my tangent about iRacing getting a McLaren MP430 on their license, but that's fun. Because McLaren have now considered that the car is so bad, they can just let the iRacing team scan it. Like, yeah. for it, scan it all you want, just hope it doesn't blow up in the sim.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it was like, we'll take that.
Yeah, if it blows up in your face, we're not responsible. You won't force to scan it, not us. So.
You scan it at your own risk, fellas. Just don't drive it past 88 miles an hour, otherwise it might go back to the future or something.
I mean, supposedly McLaren gave iRacing the CAD files, and I'm thinking, they're only doing testing. That's either a good thing or a bad thing, because they're not giving them the performance.
If a car hasn't turned a wheel in anger on a race weekend, and they're already given them permission to scan it, it's like... Yeah. Something's not really right there in terms of there. Hopefully, it's not a case that McLaren don't have confidence in that. It's a case of, you know, I mean, what exactly is that? I don't seriously suppose that McLaren are going to use iRacing to train their drivers or something.
I doubt it.
Well, they've got their own simulator.
I mean, McLaren. iRacing. It's a good simulator and all, but it's not along the fact. You know, it's not nowhere near the levels of simulation of the proper F1 teams.
No.
I mean,
no.
It's basically a nice feature. I mean, you could say that the cars on the sim are about, I don't know, 90% there, and while on the proper simulators it's 100%, but that 10% difference is quite a bit. And yeah, sorry to go off that tangent there, but I just thought it would be nice to mention and have a little dig at McLaren again.
Yeah, don't mind me, you know, like, the guy that actually hosts this goddamn show, yeah?
Sorry, Dre.
Are you still here? Okay, we forgot, sorry.
Yeah, like, I'm glad you guys remembered. moving
Harrison,
on.
Who?
Moving on from our appending Formula 1 related dooms. oh, great, another positive story. Yes, the FIA has banned the ability for a driver to be able to change helmet
I'm
designs.
So glad they're tackling the real issues of F1. God, that's just put so much hope into my, like, soul.
Yeah, drivers aren't marketable enough. Let's ban creativity. That'll solve the problem.
Again, looking at it, I can see, first of all, my point, I can see why they've done it, because look, when it gets to the point where you've got a driver like Sebastian Vettel who's changing his helmet, not every race, every session, I mean, it's a case of, yes, of course, you know, it's a case of, yes, no, it's Sebastian Vettel because he's changing it every session, but when you've got the average fan looking at it and there's the different helmet in each person, somebody's going to be thinking, why is there one guy in practice, the one guy in qualifying, the one that's a different guy in the race? No, you have to explain, no, it's the same guy, just three different helmets. And you have to explain, well, why is it not that?
I don't agree with that at all, because there's barely any drivers who change helmets. It's only really Vettel.
Yeah, and besides as well, what was the point of the permanent number change rule from last year? That's going to be a thing. Like, we're moaning about the helmets now too. What, the numbers isn't enough for you? I don't get it. Like, in a sense of, you wanted drivers to be more identifiable, okay? Mm-hmm. So what have you already done? You've already painted the two cars' T-cams a different colour. You've already now given drivers their own number that will go through them for their entire career unless they're world champions. But no, that's not enough. You've got to change the helmet. You've got to keep the same helmet now too. Like,
it's
how
purely...
much more boost do you want to be? Okay, let's make it like Sauber. We're going to slap the giant number on the side of the car now too, just to make sure, just to cover our lack of sponsors.
It's like, purely a distraction, because remember what Ryan said.
How far do you want to take it?
Remember what Ryan said last week when that story first broke. But that same day, the top teams refused to talk about the money issues, and instead passed that ruling to ban helmet changes. Of course, they've amended it now, where you can make subtle, I can't say the word, but you know, whatever, make subtle changes to the helmet, but that's it. And they haven't actually gone into the detail what the penalty is. Vettel, of course, is saying, I'll donate to charity. But, I mean, as I said, Vettel Russell's the only one who changes his helmet a lot every weekend, and there's only a few drivers which have special helmets. I don't see how it's difficult to distinguish when you have A, the cars, A, the numbers, and C, the graphics, the FOM graphics, which state who the driver is in
and
the car.
And they've added the numbers to that too last year as well, to make it even more...
And a little colour code
like,
as well.
How much more help do you need here?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the graphics get a colour code as well, if you're in a, you know, depending on what team you are. Like, what else? Do you really think your audience is dumb?
Look, I know you've got to appeal to the lowest common denominator here, and I understand the whole thing about live events, but how far do you want to take this? Like, that's all I want to know. Like, it just seems like a completely unnecessary rule change to me. Like, I said it before on video, F1 drivers get enough criticism for not being interesting. Mm. And a lot of people will always look at Formula 1 as that sport where they drive round and around in circles all the time. And in a sport where Kimi Raikkonen is one of its most popular dudes, who essentially does nothing, like, a little bit of creativity goes a long way, in my opinion. Like, I don't see what the problem is. And, you know, I suspect the people that are complaining about helmet changes and whatnot probably watched Formula 1 when it was on black and white televisions, and are probably licking their and center helmet designs in their bedroom wall 5 times a day before they go to bed. It's ridiculous.
That's what I hate Vettel a lot. I mean, I always see the comments whenever Vettel pipes up about the story, you know, oh, ban him. Like,
yeah, seriously, I got questions on the internet about this, and seriously, the day this broke, somebody literally went to my Ask FM saying, like, oh, but Dre, he thinks he's above the rules by doing this. And I'm like,
oh my god.
It's like, okay, what I don't understand is, you can't hate the rule and then hate the guy who breaks it too. it doesn't make any sense. Like, I'll give you an example. Malaysia 2013, Sebastian Vettel wins by breaking team orders. Mm-hmm. 90% of F1 fans I see break team orders. Like, they hate the idea of team orders. So, let me get this straight. You hate team orders, but you're also going to send abuse to the guy who broke it too.
It's Vettel syndrome, mate. I mean, if your name is Sebastian Vettel, you are screwed. Whatever you do, you are going to get hate. I'll go as far as saying I've already said Lewis Hamilton's the John Cena of F1. Who could Vettel be?
Roman Reigns,
yes, he's the new one. Yeah, that's it.
He's the new Roman Reigns. He's going to get criticised no matter what he does. And I understand that, because, you know, some people are never going to be liked, and that's fine. I understand that. I'm not going to turn this into some kind of Vettel defence speech, because it's not.
I'm just German anthem playing in the background as you finally defend him.
Shut up, Kraken.
I completely agree that I'm all for creativity, and I like seeing good helmet design, and I'm up for kind of, you know, expressing that in kind of on their driver helmets, things like that. The only thing is, I think probably the FIA have looked at it in the way that, well, if you look at all the iconic drivers and how you were able to identify them before, when people like, you know, Senna, Schumacher, you know Hill, Mansell, you know, Fittipaldi, Andretti, all these kind of guys, they hardly ever, if not ever, change their helmet design at all in some way. So they kind of thought, well, if they were able to get by with it, of course, in those kind of days, why can't they change it now? Now, I completely get the fact there's going to be some people look at that and think, oh, we're just looking at it through rose-tinted glasses. And I guess in some ways you can, again, I can see where you're coming from, and I agree, that's probably the approach you could take at that. But I think for some person, it's a case of where, because it's a lack of consistency in kind of the same helmet design, then effectively it's kind of then started to kind of, you know, miff a few people off, and that's because of that, that's probably the reason why they've had to bring it in. So,
Scott,
you know,
how many straws are you clutching at while making that statement? Several, I'm guessing.
You can't force a driver to be an icon by changing the rules, stopping him from just changing his helmet. Vettel is an icon in himself, actually just changing the helmet to begin with. So
I didn't say it was forced. It's just stopping him from forcing him to become an icon. I never said that. It's a case of, you know, I can probably see a reason. As I said, that's a reason why I think maybe probably they can come. I'm not saying they're forcing him to stop.
Oh no, I wasn't saying you were.
No, it's because, yeah, like I said, I completely agree that effectively it's not their helmet that makes iconic, it's effectively also, it's more what they did on track rather than what they did off track. Of course, yes, the people like Mansell, Schumacher, Senna, who did a lot off track, and the more synonymous what they did off track, just as well off track as they did on track. Granted, I agree with that, but it's a case of, you know, because obviously, because these guys were synonymous with different helmets, effectively, when you start, obviously, I know Vettel would have been an exception because he'd be synonymous with a guy that changed his helmet all the time, rather than being people like, who were people like this kind of legendary drivers who were synonymous with just their helmet colours. So I know Vettel's kind of breaking the mould in that kind of sense, and in some ways, I agree that's probably a good thing because it means he's different, it makes him stand out. But at the same time, I can see the viewpoint of the FIA saying, well, if you keep changing it, that's just not too much consistency. You need to pick one damn design, otherwise it's going to get confusing for some people. Again, I know what you mean. I agree with what Dre said, effectively, you know, how simple can you make it when you've got all that identification? But there's even going to be some people who maybe they just identify, maybe some of the younger fans look at it, and because they don't have access to all of that, I don't see that, maybe they can only identify maybe by the driver's helmet. It's like, that's why with Lewis Hamilton, when he picked his colours, it's so that, you know, him and his father picked out a design which would make him distinguishable to anyone else, effectively. Now, if he kept changing it every weekend, what good would that have done to try and figure him out, effectively, even though it's Kart 44? But if you're going to try and distinguish somebody from who it is without even having the chance to look at anything, in terms of any numbers, either on the side of the car, even the driver name on the side, obviously on a TV screen, or anything, if a driver keeps changing his helmet, how are you going to tell who that is? Again, I know that's a dumb question to ask in some cases, but there's going to be some people who, without that information, and not even be able to tell, even see the numbers on the car, if all they've got to identify them is the helmet, if they keep changing it, how are they going to tell who it is?
Fair enough.
My response to that is, who the hell cares? Like seriously, if you're remembering a guy purely on his helmet, over his own racing ability, that quite frankly is your problem more than anything else.
Absolutely, I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying there are some people out there who probably do themselves. I'm not saying I do. It's a case of, you know, I can distinguish somebody by their driver number or whatever. It's a case of there are some people I think who still do that. I think I probably in some cases, or people as part of the younger audience still do that. So it's a case of. As I said, that's probably just me looking at it generally.
Yeah, it's 2015, people. Like,
I know.
Like, I'm not saying this to you, Scott. I'm just saying it in general.
No.
It's 2015. Freedom of expression should be allowed to be a thing, and in Formula One, the helmet design is probably the only chance you're going to get with something like that.
I mean, imagine if a rule came out in 2013 when Rosberg and Hamilton had a similar looking helmet. Would they mandate that drivers do not have similar looking helmets?
Yeah, like, I don't get that. And also, not to mention, like, would you want to be the guy to tell Jenson Button and no, you cannot have a pink memorial helmet in honor of your dead dad?
Oof! Oh god, you want to be that guy? That would have been horrible.
Thank you very much. End the discussion.
Dre laid down the smackdown.
Pipe bomb and drops the mic.
Ah, it's good to be back. Right. But moving on, and pretty much wrapping up the show now. I've got a couple of other minor things to get to as well. Moving on real quick, Caterham. And looking like it really is the end of the road for the Caterham F1 team.
Dre, can we have a moment of silence?
Yeah.
Okay, that's enough. Right,
yeah. That's just harsh.
Jackie, you're a bastard, you know that, right?
Yeah, episode 9 bants.
Yeah. Oh, that was great banter. It really was.
I know where that comes from.
So does the entire internet, Scott. Well done. But Caterham, unfortunately, their assets are being auctioned off as we speak. The factory is closed, the employees have definitely been let go, and their assets, including their 2014 car, which is very surreal to see, that, you know, just 4 months ago I was watching Will Stevens drive that thing around Abu Dhabi, and now I'm seeing it on an eBay auction lot. It's like, huh? I shouldn't laugh, really. But, Caterham seemingly are no more. On the opposite side of the scale, Manor seem to be progressing in their potential comeback. They have paid their entry fee for the 2015 season, and they released a statement last week saying they are effectively working around the clock to get the car ready and shipped out to Australia, which I believe the end date on that is this Friday, March the 6th.
Did they also have at the bottom of the page in brackets, screw you, Force India?
Would imagine if that was a thing. It's like, yeah, we're going to make it for Australia's sake. We're working round the clock to get a good car. P.S. Fuck you, Force India! or something along those lines. But, yeah, you know, obviously, nice to see Manor are still trying their damnedest to try and get something going for that Grand Prix. And, you know, obviously, I wish them the best in that manner, but... Manor, see what I did there? but, I'm still very cynical about this comeback.
Seems like it's going to be a very ferric victory for Manor.
Yeah, it's like you're coming back, you know you're going to be in 10th, you're never going to outspend even Sauber, who have got more brand recognition than you do. It just feels like it's a black hole of money at this point, where money goes in and not much is going to come out. I know... Formula One has got a very fan-based mentality on Twitter these days, where everyone's like, "Yay, save Manor, save Marussia," and you know, we're all caping for him to come back and whatnot.
It's like, you know, it's like those men who pretend to like feminists just so they can get in. It's like it's like the F1 fans who pretend to like Manor just so they can get a few, you know, likes and stuff like that.
Kraken is trying to get into Grace Wilkinson's pants with this move.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, yeah, it's, even though they know the true opinion, it's kind of like, yeah, woo, yes, yeah, let's get my back into Formula One. It's just they're quietly saying, please like me.
Yeah, it's like, I know people are really caping for him, and I get why. You know,
absolutely.
It's like, you know, we Brits, we love an underdog more than anything else. We love the Tim Henmans, we love the Minardis of the world. We love that, and you know, it makes for a nice story once in a while. And you know, who wasn't cheering for them after Monaco 2014?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, but at the same time, take your fanboy hat off for a minute and realise what we're talking about: a car that's done no testing, a car that's mostly based on 2014, a car that is going to have at least one new driver in it, because Will Stevens got confirmed as one of their drivers this week.
We might even only have one car at this rate. Who knows?
Yeah, like, what's the end game here? Like,
unless the team develop a new type of hybrid unit called the FERS, which is fan energy, then they're not getting anywhere.
If they were powered by fan support, only Merckx would be beating them at this point in time.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, that's not how Formula One works. And you know what? I've got a bad feeling what's going to happen is they'll survive for like another year and a half. They'll eventually collapse again, and then what are all the fans going to say then? Like, oh, well, they tried. You know, imagine all those investors that have lost money in the team now. What are you going to say about them? I get the support, I really do. I totally understand why people are caping hard for Manor here. I totally understand it. But being a realist here, I just think I think they're dead men walking. I really do.
I can imagine a situation where if Manor finally collapsed in like a year or two time, like you say, some F1 YouTuber is going to do something really stupid. Like, we're going to get in a multiplayer lobby and we're going to have like all the cars lined up and we're going to have the Manor cars just going slowly through the middle with like funeral music in the background. It's like, oh, please don't do that, please.
They'll turn to Kickstarter. They work for Caterham, right?
So what you can't hear is the Claire Drager's furious scribbling down that idea on a bit of paper for later.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to send this off to Ben. Me and TMR are going to buy out Manor if this doesn't work out. like I have 27 pence and a Freddo. I think we're onto something.
That's a bargain, man.
Hey, man, look, given inflation, a Freddo is worth like 65p these days. So quite frankly, I think I'm onto a winner of this strategy.
If they're
going to
get a return on that investment.
Hey! Hey, you know what? I can't put money in, but here, have a chocolate. I'm sure we'll rally the troops.
Chocolate makes everything better. We know that.
Yeah, chocolate makes everything better. It really does. And following on from that, again, I know we F1 fans like to destroy Bernie for everything we hold dear, because he is the public figure of hate when it comes to Formula 1.
All hail our Lord.
Yeah. All hail our Overlord and Spectre, all 4'6" of him. for all intents and purposes, that's a thing. But I can't see the downside in this. It turns out Bernie has actually given Force India, Lotus and Sauber their championship money for the season in advance so they can pay off their suppliers. Hooray!
Supposedly it's about £30 million and they don't have to pay any interest on it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty nice of him.
It's a nice move in the sense of, one, it helps the team with their cash flow, because cash flow is very important when it comes to a business. And, you know, they need cash flow. And two, the suppliers, understandably, want money up front after basically Mauricio and Caterham screwed them last year, basically not being able to pay them. So now suppliers have had to get a little bit nasty to say, look, we need money now, basically. And, you know, Bernie's helped them out by basically giving them money in advance and, you know, not being able to pay interest on it, which is also a nice gesture. So
Bernie being progressive. Wow.
Yeah,
I'm having another aneurysm. Wait a minute.
There's going to be some people thinking, hold on a minute, what's Bernie up to here? He's obviously doing it for something, so...
He's doing it to make sure that any new teams that arrive in the scene in the future don't have suppliers who are very edgy about giving them any sort of resources.
Gene Haas, we're looking at you.
Yeah. And what's ever left of Forza Rossa?
Imagine asking Gene Haas for interest, considering how many billions that man's got put down.
Hey, if Gene Haas can look after a NASCAR team, I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah, like, I think we got this covered. Like, what's the worst that could happen? Danica Patrick comes out over the barricade with a Superman punch? That could be the worst problem that team's got to face. So if that's a thing, then I think they'll be all right, personally.
Let's face it, she almost laid one on Denny Hamlin at Daytona.
Hey! That would have been fun. In the words of Danica, it's not my fault that you're slow. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up the show. Krecken, plug yourself real quick.
I guess I just say what I usually say. Producer for the Apex Online Racing Pro Mazda series, Dre's been commentating on this season. And that's on Fizzy's channel, AOR Fizzy. You know him as Fizzy Fine 91 before his lower name change. And just watch that. Hopefully you enjoy it. And support not just me and Fizzy on that, but the drivers and the teams in that we're gonna try and go for season two. So yeah.
Yeah, some great drivers. Many of you probably know from the YouTube already. I mean, for example, Kerry Nolden. You may also know as KPT92 is one of those guys that are taking part.
I also race.
Yeah,
I do everything
too, because God damn it, somebody has to fill in for him. essentially, Scott, you know what to do.
Yeah, give me 5 minutes. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, because Dre knows what I'm like
minutes,
sometimes.
Just to make sure.
You're crazy, man.
Oh, cheers, thanks. I appreciate the extra minutes. Huh? I have a YouTube channel, sort of. I just haven't used it for a while, but I will do eventually. I keep saying that, but I will do when I've got the equipment. But anyway, if you want to follow me on Twitter, at RapidScorpion, I'll tweet on there occasionally as well. Mainly you'll find me on Downforce Radio, where we have our weekly show every Thursday called Pitboard. It's kind of like, if you ever watched Mock the Week or Have I Got News For You, pretty much a motorsport version of that, where we just kind of take the motorsport news stories and just basically rip the piss out of them. That's what we've done here, but it's motorsport in general rather than just F1, so that's always Thursdays at 8 o'clock. Also, I host a show on there called the Racing Games Podcast, everything sim racing and racing games. If you want to listen to the most recent episode, you can check out the website, downforce-radio.co.uk. We have had a GT Academy and Bathurst 12-hour winner, Florian Strauss, on the show, talking about his win and how he got through GT Academy. And also, if you want some live race day coverage, our first live event is going to be March the 28th, which is going to be hosted by yours truly and my local, which is Snetterton. That's going to be the Maximum Group, Volkswagen ID Group trophy, that's going to be live for race day, so be sure to tune in on that March 28th over that weekend. And obviously follow Downforce on Twitter at Downforce Radio and facebook.com/Downforce Radio. And there's also Bike Live on a Friday, where you've got obviously Lewis Sutherby, Becca James, and some other pum sack called Andre Harrison. Don't know who he is, but he's obviously he's alright, I suppose. So,
I see what you did there, Woodwiss. I see what you did there.
No, but honestly, the three of them do a great job. So listen to that too, and Downforce Radio, give it a listen.
Because someone's got to take care of Rebecca James fangirling over the Lowe's brothers every 2 minutes. I consider it a national service, quite frankly.
I don't envy that job, Andre. I don't envy that job.
No, me neither. But as guys don't know, if you've enjoyed the show and you haven't checked them out already, Series 2 of Bike Live starts this Friday, live 8 p.m. on Downforce Radio. Follow them on Twitter at Downforce Radio. I'm apparently one of the hosts. somehow. Apparently I'm good enough at bikes too, so who knows? Who knows? Apparently it's good talk. I might be getting Lewis on the show very soon to talk some bikes before the MotoGP season starts in 3 weeks' time. Hooray!
I guess as James Allen says, desperation is starting to sink in.
It's like that. But yeah, because if you like this show, please feel free to give it high ratings on iTunes.
Do it.
We're on iTunes too. Write a review, that would be wonderful. But in any case, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week to preview the Formula One season with me, and probably Ryan King will be back. Maybe. We'll have to wait and see on that. But from me, from Scott, and from Gino, I've been Andre Harrison. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.
See ya.